You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein, happy to be with you. Father's Day weekend, folks, solstice weekend. So a lot of cooking. I've got family birthdays also on either side of Father's Day. So a busy weekend for me personally. I hope folks are enjoying the great outdoors. Tim Lesmeister is here to help me kick off the broadcast. He's back in the upper Midwest. Tim, I put a nice fishing photo on the front of this week's Outdoor News. We've had some moderate temperatures here, seasonable temperatures. It's been really nice. Some moisture, which we certainly need across the region. Steve Carney was complaining about the heat last week, said that shut down the fishing. I'm hoping things have picked back up.
Yeah, so I just got back, like you said, to the upper Midwest from Alaska. And I'm hoping that the smallmouth bass and the pike have moved out in the Shawamigan Bay, where I'm going to be spending my next few days before heading back down to the Twin Cities. I've heard that the fishing down there has been really good. My son tells me that the fishing in the metro area has been incredibly good. He said they're catching some huge sunfish on some of the smaller metro lakes. So it sounds to me like it's going to be a banner year for anglers.
We got a lot of headlines cooking here again this week. Tim, top story of this week's Outdoor News, the elk reintroduction effort has stalled in northeastern Minnesota. An unfortunate situation. We've got two bands. We've got the Fond du Lac band that wants to establish an elk population in northeastern Minnesota. They and the state got some LCCMR dollars to try to accelerate that process. Because of chronic wasting disease rules, we can't import elk from other states. I bet we could if we really figured it out, if there was a lot of testing, if they handled the transport properly. But it's a whole lot easier to try to move some of the elk from northwestern Minnesota, where all the farmers hate them, to northeastern Minnesota, where there's, you know, at least more forested habitat. There's farmers up there who would hate them too. But we got the Red Lake band saying, no, those are elk in our treaty area. We don't want them being moved to Fond du Lac, to that region, to the northeast. And the DNR, not really willing to wade too deep into this and fight it out. I don't think they care enough about establishing a stronger elk population that they're ultimately going to have to help manage. They say they want to do it, but my take is the DNR is just kind of like, this is a good excuse not to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably the excuse because, you know, it seems to me you're right. This is an area of Minnesota that would really be great for an expanded population of elk. Sad when you've got a resource here that is, you know, it's basically a renewable resource because we do hunt them. And it's also an expandable resource. If you have the habitat, you're going to see, you know, a population of elk or any kind of animal that breeds well populate. And so I'm kind of saddened by this. I think that this would be a great opportunity, and I just wish that we could see a little bit more give and take here on both sides for, you know, reestablishing that population. You know, maybe the incentives just aren't that great. They need to come up with something that will maybe get those that Red Lake band to, you know, say, hey, you know, that makes it worth our while. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, where do you start here? It's a crying shame because of all states, Wisconsin has done a stellar job of establishing an elk herd in what kind of western and northwestern Wisconsin. They started that process in the 1990s. It's been a long, challenging haul, but those elk in that state have finally got traction, and those herds are growing quickly. They've got a number of elk tags that they're giving out every year to state hunters. Of course, the tribal hunters get just as many or more, but it's been a real success story. And it, for a while there, it didn't look like it was going to happen. It looked like that elk herd might not make it for the long haul, but I think they added some new animals to the herd, you know, kind of boosted the genetic viability of them, and now they've exploded. I don't think they've got 1,000 elk statewide yet. They've got that, you know, southern Wisconsin herd, well, the Black River Forest herd in kind of south central western Wisconsin. I think between the two herds, I bet they've got 700, 750 animals, Tim, and the way it's growing, they're going to have 1,000, I think, probably in, you know, in the next 5 years or so. Gosh, if they can do it in Wisconsin, you would certainly think we could establish a strong elk herd in eastern Minnesota, kind of, you know, not all the way up into Boundary Waters country, kind of be in that Cloquet area. And then you bring the tribal factor into it, and it's just kind of unfortunate. It seems like a bit of a rivalry that's preventing some progress. You know, the other thing is, I mean, I have a bit of a problem with Red Lake, you know, laying claim. Like, those are all of our elk. They're in our treaty area. I mean, they were established by the state. They were pretty much extinct up there. It took a lot of state work and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears from outdoor writers to advocate for those herds, because we know legislators and farmers up there hate them. And for the Red Lake Band to just, you know, kind of be this massive roadblock, it's unfortunate when we're all just trying to do a good thing here.
But you also made a good point earlier that if the DNR really wanted to make something like this happen, they would probably be talking to some out-of-state DNRs to try and see if they could get some testing done on some of their elk that they could move into this region. I think there's some solutions here. It's just that you have to have a rock-solid interest in this and really want it to go forward, and that's probably not going to happen.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister are kicking off this week's broadcast, kind of talking some big game. Maybe we'll stick with a hunting theme a little bit. I saw an item out in Nebraska where they are actually moving their turkey seasons later in the year, kind of roughly about the same time as Minnesota's. Nebraska, I guess, did get going a little earlier with their seasons. And it's another one of these states that says we're doing this because we're concerned about turkey reproductive success. And we've talked about this a lot in some southern states. It feels like it's creeping north a little bit. You know, we just thought this turkey thing was going to be this burgeoning success forever. And we're finding if we don't apply some little more stringent management standards, turkey populations can start to decline a little bit, and Nebraska trying to make some changes. They get a lot of non-residents who hunt in that state, from Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, across the country. I think you can get a Rio there. You can probably get a Merriam's bird also in parts of Nebraska. And they don't want to jeopardize that gravy train.
And I think it's smart. I think whenever you get into a situation where you have to make changes, because typically a government agency does not make fast changes. They take their time. And in a situation where you see something needs to be done right away and they do it, I'm always happy to see that. So I think it was a smart move. I think it will help to maintain, even possibly increase, the population of turkeys in that state. And I'm very glad to see it.
Okay, we're going to be jumping around a lot here. There's a lot of headlines, a lot of these headlines are a mile wide and 2 inches deep. So there's not a lot of detail to get into some of them, but Tim and I will be bouncing around a bit. Going up to North Dakota, Tim, we got some breeding duck results across North Dakota, very dry across the duck factory again. We seem to be in a scenario where we're just dealing with permanent drought now. And that's because of all the tiling out there. I mean, the water hits the ground, private ground, and it's gone very quickly. So I'm hearing duck biologists more and more talk about permanent drought. That doesn't seem to get the attention of the feds. They have no interest in reducing bag limits or season lengths. That's just become laughable, the lengths of the seasons every year. But the North Dakota numbers, you know, actually a little bit steady from last year. Looked like the puddle ducks, mallards, and pintails up. Now, you know, pintails can be up 30-40%, and they're so low off the long-term average, it doesn't really matter. But one thing that jumped out at me is diver ducks. I believe all four diver duck species were down out there.
You need water for diver ducks, and that's one of the things that we're not getting enough of out in that major flyway. You know, North Dakota, I mean, that's the place you go to duck hunt because that's where the ducks are. But it's getting to the point now where there are fewer and fewer ducks just because, as you said, we're losing habitat. You need water. And that's one of the things that's causing these problems. Not only it's a multiple reason thing, like you said, tiles draining wetlands and just a lack of rain out there, drought conditions. It's interesting that you mentioned the seasons not getting modified. And I think the reason for that is because Department of Natural Resources, those that manage this, both state and federal, it bothers them. It worries them that they might have to modify a season, shorten it up, and then lose license sales. If you lose license sales, that's money that just doesn't come into the program. And that's their fear. I'm not sure that would happen, but I think that's what they believe would be a big problem for them, is if they make the season shorter, if they modify things even just a little bit, hunters will say to heck with it and not buy a license. And so that's why they maintain status quo. I've said it before. I said it just recently, that it takes forever for a government agency to make changes. Same goes for ducks. By the time they get things where it needs to be, conditions have changed and they need to do something else. It's hard for them to do split second decisions to maintain or help a population of birds or animals or whatever. And that's kind of the situation we're in now in the Dakotas.
Total number of ducks in North Dakota down about 10% from 2025. The estimate was 2.4 million ducks, a decline of more than 250,000 ducks from last year. We're going to be getting the federal numbers here, I would think, in a couple weeks. And of course, North Dakota is critical to those federal numbers, being in the heart of the duck factory. With North Dakota down, I got to think a lot of those federal numbers will be down too. And nothing will change with the seasons, even though ducks will be down again. Let's grab a break. Tim, you'll stick around. We'll talk at the end of the show.
Sounds good.
That's our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
You don't hunt ducks because it's easy. You hunt because it's earned. When the first flock locks up over the decoys, that's why you do it. This July 24th through the 26th, the grind meets its tribe in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo, presented by Hevi. 3 days of nothing but waterfowl, gear, proven rigs, calling competitions, real strategy, no fluff. Get your tickets now at deltawaterfowlexpo.com. Duck season doesn't start in October. It starts here.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
This Father's Day, don't just buy Dad another tie. Give him a legacy that will last for generations. Rite has a gun to fit his needs, whether he's in the turkey woods, duck blind, or plinking in the backyard. Dad deserves a firearm that works as hard as he does. Rite features a limited lifetime warranty, unmatched customer service, and undeniable performance. Its precision engineering meets world-class aesthetics. Make this Father's Day one he'll never forget. Visit RiteUSA.com or your local dealer today.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at FiresideLodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
Spring coho and steelhead are on, and Ken's is leading the charge on Lake Michigan. Fish with Wisconsin's number one Lake Michigan charter service, running out of three prime ports: Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, Sturgeon Bay, and Algoma, Wisconsin. Kick off the season with fast-paced rod-bending coho and steelhead action out of Winthrop Harbor, Illinois, where limit catches are the expectation, not the exception. Spots fill fast. Call 800-446-8605 or book online at www.kinscatch.com. That's Ken Sports Fishing. Your spring bite starts here.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline with you for another segment. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191 if you want to subscribe to our print or digital version. We had a front page story this week about some shenanigans in the U.S. Congress involving the roadless rule. We've also talked about the federal roadless rule as it pertains to some of the actions that the Trump administration might also be taking. The issue really exploded, however, last week with what we saw in a congressional committee. We were a little late getting it on OutdoorNews.com, but it is there now. We had a very thorough story by Tori McCormick. And now I've got a special guest from Trout Unlimited who's going to flesh the issue out with me a little bit more and listeners. His name is Corey Fisher. He's the Public Land Policy Director for Trout Unlimited. He's based out in Montana, but he spent a fair amount of time in the upper Midwest. Corey, thanks for joining me. And tell us about your time here in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Appreciate joining you here today. Again, Corey Fisher, I'm Public Land Policy Director for Trout Unlimited. I grew up in Michigan and then went to college in northern Wisconsin, exploring the Shawamigan National Forest and those backcountry areas there that offer great trout fishing for brookies, rough grouse hunting. And then I also spent a few years working in northern Minnesota for the Forest Service on the Superior National Forest in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness.
Well, even though you're in Montana, I think you qualify as one of us, so you're going to be a respected source here today. Let's talk about the roadless rule. This thing goes back to 2001, correct? It stewed in the Clinton administration for a number of years, but it was one of the last things that was enacted before the Clinton administration exited at the start of this century. So it's a quarter century old.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it was put in place to try to resolve some of these longstanding conflicts over the management of these backcountry roadless areas. And, you know, with a multi-billion dollar road maintenance backlog, that was some of the reasoning behind it. Kind of the rule of holes. When you find yourself over your head in a hole, put down the shovel. And in this case, putting down the shovel meant we're going to stop building roads we can't take care of into these backcountry roadless areas. So as you said, it's been in place for a quarter century. It's been really effective, I think, in balancing multiple uses within these landscapes. And really just does two things. One, it says no new road construction and no industrial scale logging, but everything else the roadless rule doesn't affect, and allows things like motorized use on existing trails, forest health projects to improve wildlife habitat and reduce, you know, wildfire hazards. So doing that thinning and prescribed burning, it's a really flexible tool for land managers.
And the Clinton administration didn't enact this on a whim. This was a multi-year project. They took, what, millions of public comments. I know Mike Dombeck fairly well. Mike was the U.S. Forest Service chief at the time. One of the most practical people you're ever going to meet. And he will talk about how deliberate they were about this and how he considers it a conservative rule. That the idea here was to try to save some money, not create new roads that we have to maintain. And Corey, it's worth pointing out, this does not affect all of the national forest acreage out there, right? This is just a fairly small component of what falls under U.S. National Forest Service purview.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the roadless rule affects roadless areas that are in, I believe it's 39 states throughout the country. So really everywhere from, you know, Alaska down to Florida even. But as you said, it's not the totality of the national forest system. You know, in Minnesota, it's about 60,000 acres. So 2% of the Forest Service lands in Minnesota are roadless. You know, Wisconsin, it's similar. It's about 69,000 acres or 6% of the Forest Service lands in the state. So we're not talking about the, you know, the totality of the national forest system. We're really talking about a smaller portion that are some of our last best fish and wildlife habitat and hunting and angling areas.
Yeah, it's about 59 million acres, I think, nationally. There might be folks listening who are thinking, well, it sounds like the bulk of those are out west. What would you say to folks who would say, well, this is a western issue. This is an Alaskan issue. Bring it back home for my listeners a little bit.
Yeah, definitely where I live, we're talking at, you know, there's millions of acres here in Montana of roadless areas. But I would say, like up in the upper Midwest, that those roadless areas, while may not be millions of acres, it's really an outsized value for hunters and anglers. Looking at Minnesota, Trout Unlimited did some research looking at, like, okay, what are the values of these areas for trout fisheries? And in Minnesota, of those 60,000 acres, about 38% of them are headwaters of designated trout streams. You know, looking at Wisconsin, you know, 10 out of there's 16 inventoried roadless areas in Wisconsin, and 10 of those are headwaters of classified trout streams. So these are the areas that provide that healthy habitat, cold, clean water that those trout fisheries need.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Gerisline. We are chatting with Corey Fisher. He's the Public Land Policy Director from Trout Unlimited. He and his organization are opposed to efforts in the U.S. Congress and within the Trump administration to try to repeal the 25-year-old roadless rule. Corey, there might be folks out there listening who are saying, you know, gosh, build some more roads. That's more access for me. It's going to be easier for me to get back in there where I want to go. How would you respond to someone like that? Why isn't it important not to build more roads?
You know, a couple of reasons. One is we have about 370,000 miles of roads already on the national forest system. So extensive, you know, more roads than the, you know, the interstate system in the United States. Within that, there's a multi-billion dollar road maintenance backlog. And that means that on those roads, there's problems with erosion and sediment running off into trout streams, you know, creating problems for trout to spawn. It creates travel challenges. You know, if we can't maintain these roads, it's hard to act, even though the roads are there, it's hard to access public lands because they are so poorly maintained. And then we have problems with, you know, habitat fragmentation, both for big game, deer, elk, and also for trout. You put these roads into intact habitat and you really reduce the effectiveness of that habitat for the animals we'd like to go out and hunt and fish for. So it's really multiple reasons why increasing road density on our national forests really does equate to a reduction in the quality of fish and wildlife habitat, and that leads to a reduction in the quality of hunting and fishing.
Now, advocates for repealing the roadless rule keep throwing the fire thing in front of everybody, that we need more roads so that we can contain fires, especially out west. And anyone who watches the news, Corey, we see a lot of fires out west, in northern Minnesota, places like that. How do you respond to that concern?
Yeah, the fires are a big issue, you know, throughout the west right now. You know, we're dealing with a massive drought and record low snowpack. So we're anticipating a very smoky year and big fires. So we definitely feel those impacts. But what I would say is that the roadless rule is a flexible tool that allows the agency to do those hazardous fuel reduction projects, like thinning out overstocked trees that are needed to reduce the risk of wildfire. In fact, there's been millions of acres of those hazardous fuel reduction projects that have already occurred within the exceptions that are written into the roadless rule. So it's I really feel like the fire issue is a red herring.
Let's talk about where this is public policy-wise in Washington, D.C. The Trump administration last year announced it wanted to repeal the roadless rule. It did a public comment period, and I don't know if I've seen the official numbers, but the vibe seems to be they were absolutely overwhelmed by opposition to repealing the rule. And we haven't heard anything from the Trump administration about that executive effort going on right now. I don't know. Is that imminent? Are we going to hear? Where does that stand?
Yeah. So you're right. You know, it was a very, I would say, truncated comment period. But even with that short window of time that was provided, it was hundreds of thousands of comments that the agency received. And over 90% of those were in favor of maintaining protections for roadless areas. So by and large, the public has voiced support for keeping the roadless rule as it is and the management of those lands as it is. I anticipate that later on this summer is when we're going to see the agency come out with a draft rule and the environmental impact statement that they produced along with that. And that's going to open up another public comment period. So that's something that I think, you know, listeners should be on the lookout for, is later on this summer, probably into July, maybe August, when we're going to see another comment period and an opportunity to weigh in.
And then on the Congress side, we've got a bipartisan wildfire containment bill. Everybody agrees with that. And then last week, our friend Senator Mike Lee from Utah, if you listen to the show, his name comes up a lot because he's usually doing anti-public lands things, offered an amendment to flat out repeal this roadless rule. It passed, 11-9 in that committee. What's the next step? Do we expect to see that on the entire Senate floor soon?
Potentially. You know, that would be the next step because it was reported out of committee. You know, I would just say, we do need to be doing more forest management, forest and watershed restoration on our national forests. And we, like you said, that wildfire bill that the amendment was attached to that had bipartisan support. And I think we need more bipartisan space. It was unfortunate to see that attached to it. And it's hard to say where that's going to go or when it might go there, but that would be the next step, is would be it to be on the Senate floor. So it's important, I think, for senators really around the country to be hearing from their constituents that we don't want to see this move forward with the roadless repeal attached.
I appreciate the leadership role that Trout Unlimited has taken on this issue. You can learn a lot more to your heart's content and then some at tu.org. Scroll down and you'll see campaigns. You can read an article about standing up for the roadless rule. And then you've got another great website, standup.tu.org. That's front and center on that site also. A quick way to advocate for not repealing this roadless rule. All those details are there, standup.tu.org. Corey, thanks a lot for joining me. Good luck. Keep up the good fight.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Rob. Likewise, and nice to be able to get back to my Midwestern roots a little bit and talk about places that I've long held in my heart.
Corey Fisher, Public Land Policy Director for Trout Unlimited, talking about the roadless rule. Learn more at standup.tu.org. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam, July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Looking for the ultimate Minnesota outdoor experience? Join us at Game Fair 2026, returning to the Armstrong Ranch in Ramsey on August 7th, 8th, and 9th, and August 14th, 15th, and 16th. Explore more than 80 acres packed with the latest hunting gear, outdoor exhibits, field demonstrations, dog events, and hands-on activities for the whole family. Since 1982, Game Fair is where the outdoors comes alive. Find tickets and more information at gamefair.com.
Now is the perfect time to plan your 2026 shoreline or stream bank restoration project. Native plantings provide functional beauty while reducing erosion, limiting runoff, and improving the quality of the water you love. Whether you're a homeowner or a lake association, Minnesota Native Landscapes has the knowledge, experience, and tools to do it right. Site assessment appointments are filling fast. Visit us at mnlcorp.com. That's mnlcorp.com.
Ducks Unlimited has been protecting and restoring wetlands for nearly 90 years. From breeding grounds and migration routes to wintering areas across North America, we need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone. DU volunteers are the engine that raises the funds to make conservation happen, selling tickets, securing donations, and finding sponsors. If you've got the passion, we've got a role for you. Visit ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
You know the drill. You got a free Saturday, the boat's ready, but you're scrolling through the same tired fishing reports trying to figure out where to go. Stop guessing and start catching. Onyx Fish lets you filter thousands of Midwest lakes by species, trophy potential, even keeper size, all backed by real DNR survey data. Plus, Onyx Fish is brand new on Android, so no more excuses. Try free for 7 days. Download Onyx Fish on the App Store or Google Play. Your next favorite lake is out there. Go find it.
Great weather means it's time for kids to go out and play. But kids aren't the only ones outdoors. Ticks that spread Lyme disease and other infections are also active in the spring and summer. CDC reminds you and your children to wear insect repellent, bathe or shower as soon as possible after coming indoors, and check for ticks daily. If you've been bitten by a tick and develop fever, rash, or fatigue, seek medical care. To learn more, visit www.cdc.gov/Lyme.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Zerisline. Thanks a lot for tuning in. If you like the content of the broadcast, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. Let's talk about something cooking with DNR Fisheries right now. Periodically, the agency likes to alter some of its special regulations out there, and they just pitched about a dozen more, I believe, around the state. There's a public comment period on it. The DNR is looking for input, and I thought we'd go right to the DNR itself and ask some questions about this process. We've got John Dunn with us. He is the Fisheries Rules and Regulations Coordinator. He's with us now. John, it sounds like you've been at the agency about a year. Good to have you on the show.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk a big picture, 20,000 feet. Like I say, periodically, the DNR is altering special fishing regulations around the state. I don't know. Can you speak to that? How many lakes do we have in the state that have special fishing regs, and why are they necessary?
Yeah, so we do have a good number of lakes and even stretches of rivers or streams that have special or experimental regulations on them. Probably in the hundreds at this point, don't have an exact number. But this is a way that we can manage individual bodies of water separate from the statewide limits. So there's a whole variety of reasons that these could be implemented, whether it's we identify an opportunity maybe to increase size structure or fishing opportunities, or, you know, at times if there is an issue that's found through surveys or feedback from anglers, we may be able to implement something a little bit different on these bodies of water.
Do you get much public feedback on the overall concept of special regs? I know I've spoken to some people who maybe are new to fishing or not as entrenched in understanding fisheries and wildlife management as I have been. They grouse to me a little bit like, man, why can't it just be one fishing reg? Well, why do we have to have all these different regs? A, do you hear much of that grousing? And B, what's your retort to that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I hear that. I'm not originally from this state, so it was a little bit new to me when I first moved here to see some of the special and experimental regulations. And when you look at how much water we have in Minnesota and just the diversity of the landscapes and the ecosystems, that's really the reason why we have these. And we have such a robust agency here to manage these, all of the natural resources, that this allows us to best implement different practices, like I said, to meet different management goals for these specific bodies of water.
Now, John, you and I were talking a little bit before we got started. You're from down south originally, and tell me if I'm wrong, it would seem like in general, maybe in southern waters, you don't need to have quite as much diversity in your regulations because you got a longer growing season. You've got fish have it pretty good down there, right? They can grow big. They got a lot of food, fertile waters. Whereas up here, you got to put a little more nuance, and we've got a ton of freshwater fishing pressure, right?
Right.
And there's parts of the South that get pounded too, but we have a lot of anglers, and that added pressure kind of requires, like I say, water specific regulations.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, definitely where I'm originally from, a lot less regulations and stuff like that. But also there's so much less water down there. Mm-hmm. As far as natural lakes, I mean, there's really none in where I'm from. You know, you have rivers and you have impoundments and stuff like that. But again, just the diversity and the opportunities that we have here in the state of Minnesota really is incredible. This process of implementing special and experimental regulations helps us to manage that in the most effective way possible.
You having a good time fishing up here, John?
Absolutely. I can't complain.
Good. Glad to hear it. All right. Well, let's talk specifically about what the DNR's got cooking now. Like, say, about 12 lakes. Looks like some really strong emphasis on sunfish regulations. What's that all about?
Yeah, I'll say it's not that we're necessarily focusing on sunfish at the exclusion of any other species, but I will say sunfish are a very important group of fish here in Minnesota. You know, whether you're a new angler just getting into fishing or you're a experienced angler, especially you look at some of the ice anglers that have all the gear and technology still going after sunfish. They're just a really important and popular game fish to target. And, you know, we have some an exciting new regulation that's being proposed this year for sunfish. And it's something that gets a lot of attention from the public.
Tell us, what is that specific regulation? What's new about it and where potentially will it be applied?
Yeah, so we have, I believe it's 6 lakes being proposed right now that have what I refer to as the 20 and 5 regulation. So it's the same total amount, so 20 combined total sunfish would be your daily in possession limit. But the difference is you can only have 5 that are over 8 inches. And that's really the new part of the regulation. You know, we haven't had length limits for sunfish prior to this. And so it's an exciting new regulation based on, you know, a lot of research and input from different area supervisors.
So only 5 can be 8 inches or more. What's the idea there to leave some of these bigger bluegills out there so that they're the brood stock and they pass on their bigger genetics? Can you speak to the biology a little bit, John?
Yeah.
How does that work? I know you're not a fisheries biologist, but can you give listeners a little bit of what's cooking here?
Absolutely. Yeah. So for more more details, you know, we definitely have subject matter experts that can speak a little bit more to this. But the way I like to think of it is when you have larger sunfish in a population, they prevent those smaller sunfish from being able to reproduce. So those smaller sunfish then are forced to devote all of their energy and resources to growing bigger in order for that opportunity to reproduce. Whereas when you remove all of those larger sunfish from the population, it allows the smaller sunfish to start reproducing. And so then at that point, those smaller sunfish have no reason to grow larger, and they're devoting their energy and resources towards reproduction as opposed to growing bigger. So that's a very simplified version, but that's kind of how I like to think of it.
Well, I suspect a lot of folks out there listening are nodding their heads because we've all gone fishing on lakes where we see just oodles and oodles of tiny little sunfish. And if there's a way to try to increase the size structure of those fish, I think most folks would be on board with that. So I like anytime the DNR tries some new regulations like this to see if they work and maybe then can ultimately expand them onto other lakes. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerison, we're chatting with John Dunn. He is the Fisheries Rules and Regulations Coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The agency just this past week issued a press release explaining that it's pitching some special regulations on about a dozen lakes across the state. I think 9 of them are sunfish. There's also a walleye rule, maybe a pike rule in there too. Let's talk about the public input part of this, John. How can folks chime in? Yay or nay, however they feel about it, how can they get involved?
Yeah, so we just opened up the public comment phase for this process. So that was at the beginning of June. We published our online questionnaire. You can find it on the DNR website. We also posted signs at all of the access points for the lakes that are affected by these proposals. If you go to any of those access points, you can see a very short synopsis of what's being proposed on the yellow signs. There's also a QR code that you can scan on your phone. It'll take you straight to that survey. The survey also includes a little bit of background, just as why are we proposing this? What's the general goal, what we're trying to do? And then it has just a few questions you can answer about, do you support this? Is there any comment that you want to provide? You can choose which ones to answer. You don't have to respond to all of them if you don't want to, or you can on that survey. And then that survey will stay open through the end of September. Early to mid-September is also when we'll have a few public input meetings where the public can show up either in person or virtually and, again, provide feedback.
Again, folks, you can find that online questionnaire. Go to mndnr.gov, click news, and just check out the June 15th press release on this. Minnesota DNR seeks input on proposed special fishing regulations. There's a link there to that online questionnaire. That's one of the quickest ways probably to get to it. Per John's point, you need to fill that out by September 30th, so you got some time. And then it sounds like in late August, we're going to find out the times of these public meetings. We will have that on WCCO Outdoors as well as in Outdoor News if folks want to participate in one of those meetings directly. Before we let you go, John, I had one of your colleagues on, Sarah Middleton. I had her on. We talked about how you folks were kind of reviewing the regulations booklet, maybe tuning that up, seeking public comment on that. It's my understanding the public input portion of that is over, but can you give listeners a quick 30-second synopsis of where that process is at?
Yeah, so we just wrapped that up recently. I believe we had about 800 or so responses, which was great to get that much feedback. And we've been looking through the comments and trying to see, you know, what we can do in the short term and also down the road. The regulations books, they really are an effort in continuous improvement. So we're always trying to make sure we're communicating all of the information as effectively as possible. There's nothing planned immediately for this, but we are continuing to evaluate the information we've gotten so far. And we're going to, you know, plan to build on this in the future and just making sure we're meeting the public's need and providing that information.
We'll look forward to seeing the final product of that. We got the hunting regulations coming out not too far in the future. I usually expect to see those around Game Fair in early August. Well, John, thanks for joining us one more time. Circling back, we're talking about the DNR looking for input on special fishing regulations. Go to mndnr.gov, click the June 15th press release, and you can hop onto the online questionnaire right there if you decide you want to chime in. John, thanks for joining me, and have a good week ahead, a good summer.
Thanks, you too.
That was John Dunn, Fisheries Rules and Regulations Coordinator for the Minnesota DNR. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
This Father's Day, don't just buy Dad another tie. Give him a legacy that will last for generations. Retay has a gun to fit his needs, whether he's in the turkey woods, duck blind, or plinking in the backyard. Dad deserves a firearm that works as hard as he does. Retay features a limited lifetime warranty, unmatched customer service, and undeniable performance. It's precision engineering meets world-class aesthetics. Make this Father's Day one he'll never forget. Visit RetailUSA.com or your local dealer today.
You don't hunt ducks because it's easy. You hunt because it's earned. When the first flock locks up over the decoys, that's why you do it. This July 24th through the 26th, the grind meets its tribe in Des Moines. The Delta Waterfowl Duck Hunters Expo presented by Hevy. 3 days of nothing but waterfowl, gear, proven rigs, calling competitions, real strategy, no fluff. Get your tickets now at DeltaWaterfowlExpo.com. Duck season doesn't start in October. It starts here.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the Atlantic Flyway, across America's Great Plains and down the Mississippi Delta, Ducks Unlimited has protected and restored habitat for nearly 90 years. We need your help to reach our next million-acre milestone and ensure waterfowl for generations to come. Whether you're selling tickets, securing donations, or finding that next sponsor, there's a role for everyone. Join today at ducks.org/volunteer. Ducks Unlimited. Conservation for a continent.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
From sunrise casts to sunset stories by the fire, Fireside Lodge is more than a fishing trip. It's an experience worth coming back to. Cast your line into pristine northwestern Ontario waters, reel in the catch of a lifetime, and unwind in comfort at the end of the day. Whether it's your first trip or an annual tradition, Fireside Lodge delivers the experience you've been waiting for. Book your 2026 adventure today at firesidelodge.com or call 1-800-545-0815.
The Woodstock for Hunters Hunt Stock is coming to Wisconsin to the Dodge County Fairgrounds in Beaver Dam July 17th through the 19th. Hang out with all the boys from the hunting public. Seminars from Lanny Benoit, Dan Infault, Barry Wenzel, John Eberhardt, Billy Malls, Jared Scheffler, and Dan Small. Huge giveaways, top hunting exhibitors, 3D archery, live music, and campsites right there. Plan ahead and get your tickets online at huntstockevents.com. Use code RADIO at checkout to save 10%. Hunt Stock. Feels less like a trade show, more like a deer camp.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Jerisline with you. Final segment of this week's broadcast. We'll have Tim Westmetzer here help me wrap it up. If you like the broadcast here, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions that way. Tim, welcome back. I wrote my column a little bit this week about some of my experiences with the new DNR licensing app. We talked about it some last week. I was able to get it up and running. I got a little more feedback. The DNR is putting a very positive spin on it. Yeah, they had a little bit of a hiccup there that first day where it took a while to get it loaded on the Apple Store app. But by the end of the day last Tuesday and And by Wednesday, it was the top app. If you searched MNDNR licensing, go figure, which it should be. It sounded like, you know, they had the vendor on site. People were calling in. They were taking a lot of extra calls. You know, year one is always challenging. Anytime you make a software change, usually by year two, you get through, you know, most of the problems with, you know, having a digit off or a letter off, that sort of thing. It sounded like, you know, maybe sales were even up a little bit last week from the same week a year ago. And I think that makes sense. I think a lot of people jumped on the app and bought a license to test it. That was what I did. It seems to be working pretty well.
I have tried it. I think it's an excellent app. I'm impressed. I'll be honest with you. Most of the time when I see an app start up, I think to myself, oh boy, we're going to have some glitches. It's going to be a while before we get them ironed out. This one's quite good. I'm actually pretty pleased with this app here. I think most of the anglers and anyone out buying a license now that are buying it this time of year are going to find out that it works great. There's always a few steps that you got to get through, the sign up, the password. There's a note that you had in your column about now you can use facial recognition.
Yeah.
And I like that little comment that said the only person that can open it is someone that looks like you. Oh, too bad.
Yeah.
Self-deprecating.
Self-deprecating. But Tim, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because that was something I didn't know. On any app on your phone, if you just click and hold it, you'll get a little window and then it gives you, you can highlight the option to use facial recognition. And when I loaded the app last week and then, you know, I went to reopen it, it very quickly opened up to a page with all my personal information. And of course, someone needs, you know, a code, a password code to crack into the phone. So there's that level of security. But I just like adding that facial recognition too, with all that personal info there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love the facial recognition on the phone. Again, but I hope no one looks exactly like me, but I'm sure I got a doppelganger out there somewhere. Bottom line, it's a great app. You're going to find it's very user-friendly. Everybody's got a smartphone, it seems like, these days. I'd say probably only about 2% of the population is still operating without one. The bottom line is, again, it's really a great app. I expected a couple problems right off the bat. It was very negligible, and I'm thinking that they should be very, very happy with this program that they set up, and there'll be some improvements down the line, but right now I'd say it's in great shape.
Tim, I thought Ryan Rothstein had a good column this week talking about some of the woody invasives that he's seen in our forests. When he wrote that, I started editing it, and the three that he identified, buckthorn, honeysuckle, and Japanese barberry, all immediately jumped out at me because all three of those plants are just rampant on my dad's place down in southeastern Minnesota. We've worked pretty hard down there to contain the buckthorn and the honeysuckle to the point where actually you don't see a lot of either of those species on my dad's place. But dad's got a long trail that goes down into a valley that it's gotten harder for us to get down into. You know, some erosion makes it tough to get our ATV in that area. My dad's gotten older. He doesn't get down there as much to do woodland management like he used to fight the invasives. And that Japanese barberry has exploded. It covers all the slopes, not only on his place, but in a lot of valleys. It's nasty. It's got no value to wildlife. It's prickly. It's got thorns on it. It's a small shrub. It doesn't get big like buckthorn or honeysuckle. It's just really bad stuff. And so I asked my dad, gosh, can you shoot some pictures to go with Ryan Rothstein's column? And Ryan is right. If we don't figure out ways to more aggressively manage this stuff, we're going to lose our oak hickory forests. It's already to the point where, to Ryan's point, you don't see young oaks. You don't see young hickories. They're not able to get established in the understory. So what you've got is our big old oaks that are still producing acorns for deer, turkeys, other wildlife. But he said, yeah, one big storm comes through an area and knocks down those big oaks. That's the end of your oak hickory forest in a lot of these areas. I don't sense this is on the radar of a lot of people, but I know from personal experience it's important.
It's a never-ending battle that most people, after a while, just give up. And I can understand it. We've got property down in northeast Iowa where the multifloral rose is awful stuff. And after a while, you just go, you know what? I don't know if I can beat this stuff. I don't know if I can actually get a leg up on it. You just got to keep fighting and mowing and digging and cutting and doing whatever you can.
I don't know if goats will eat that barberry. I know they bring goats in sometimes to try to eat the buckthorn, knock the buckthorn back in some areas. That barberry is right at their level. Now, it's got nasty thorns on it. I don't know if that would prevent them from eating it. I think I've mentioned before, I have a little riparian area behind my home, my suburban home up against a pond. I let it grow out. I don't have it mowed down, but I try to keep it just a native species. And I can't believe what a battle it is year after year after year to try to keep the buckthorn out of that area. You know, they say if you cut it back enough after several years, the root system will die. I can tell you that's false. Year after year, I find myself cutting stems off, you know, stumps that I have cut before. I'm cautious about treating the stumps with chemical because then it kills the trees around it. The trees are all interconnected, and I don't want to do that. I had that happen one year. You know, I walk around suburban trails. I bike around suburban trails in the metro, and all I'm doing as I'm biking on these trails is going past a wall of buckthorn everywhere because these suburban communities don't know how to fight the stuff.
It's a never-ending battle, and some of us just look back at this and say, can we win? Some just give up. I think that it's going to be one of those fights that we have to, you know, be conscientious and dedicated and just keep plugging away. I don't know if we'll ever eradicate it.
You used to joke about how we needed a carp STD to knock the carp back. And that's exactly what happened. This koi herpes actually got into some waterways like the Mississippi and has really knocked the carp back. We could use that in a lot of other places. Now, of course, you know, they build up resistance to it. The few that survive and they have short lifespans, they rebound and then they're less likely to get it. And then you got a lot of carp again. But I'm not aware of any sort of biological control for the three invasive woody plants we just talked about. We've had some success with biological control with purple loosestrife in some of our wetlands, but I think it just takes aggressive management with these woody invasives.
Yeah, you just got to keep pulling, keep mowing, keep dragging the stuff out from wherever it's at. And I think once you get those forests established, I think once those trees get up there and create some shade, this stuff, it doesn't have near the holding power.
Tim, did you see a little feature we had about Randy Moss being a big-time bass fisherman? I guess Moss had a cancer fight. It sounds like he's over that, and he's devoting a lot of his time to fishing. And some of the he's got a charity he's working on behalf of to fight cancer here in the Twin Cities. Good to see Mr. Moss rebounding from his ailment and devoting some of his time to a good cause.
Yeah, him and Johnny Lobb were really good buddies. John worked up at Frankie's Marine. He was a great angler, a tournament fisherman, and he befriended Randy when Randy was here playing with the Vikings, and these guys used to be seen out on the water pretty much whenever Moss could bust loose and go fishing. There's a lot of great athletes out there that were hardcore anglers. Kirby Puckett was an angler. I fished some of Randy Moss's tournaments. He used to hold some events here to raise money for certain causes on Lake Minnetonka, and I fished some of those tournaments. Got a chance to hang out with the guy. He's really a great guy. Randy Moss was an incredible football player. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's without a doubt one of the best receivers that Minnesota ever had, and also has gotten to the point now where he is really hardcore when it comes to bass fishing. I'm glad to see that he beat that cancer. That was a rare form of cancer. Mm-hmm.
Well, Tim, thank you for spending a couple seconds with me again. I hope you have a good week. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
My buddy Tim Lesmeister, thank you to him and all of our other guests, all of our listeners. I hope you have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Dreisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.